WODLP, Tacoma Park, 94.3 on the radio, streaming worldwide on TacomaRadio.org. It's Tuesday, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and you are in the midst of an epic. Live radio 94.3 from the Stuart Moore studio of WOWD of Tacoma Park. You can find us on Facebook, Carolivia.Heron, Epic City, and Twitter, Carolivia. This is Epic City with your host, Carolivia Heron, listening to Richie Havens, Freedom, Tuesday, July 19th, 2022. Say their names. Today I'm remembering a little 7-year-old girl, an enslaved little girl, who wanted to read. She was given to a little white girl named Sarah Grimke, and Sarah wanted her friend to learn to read. So she would stuff things in the crack of the door so nobody could hear as she taught little Patty to read, learn her alphabet, and read some books. And one day, Sarah's mother came in and found them and took little Hattie, a little 7-year-old girl. What could make someone stand over a 7-year-old child with a whip and beat a child like that? Hattie was beaten. Sarah was not punished at all. But Sarah remembered the horror. And as soon as she turned 18, she left her slave driving family and went north with her sister, Angelina Grimke, became famous abolitionist. But little Hattie, a month after the beating, died. Someone was lost. That's the epic moment. What makes the epic keep going? One epic answers another epic, answers another epic, answers another. Someone was lost, something is left out. Somebody's story is not remembered. And so the story keeps going. Story keeps going. Remembering little Hattie today, who died because she wanted to read. Freedom, Richie Havens. I heard that story this weekend at Fort Stevens, a commemoration of the Battle of Fort Stevens, which is held every year, commemorating the battles that saved Washington from Monocacy to Fort Stevens and the other forts encircling Washington, D.C. I was shocked. Sometimes hearing an individual story can be more shocking than hearing about millions and billions of horror stories. Very much affected by that. So someone was lost, and the epic has to keep on going to include all the stories toward a more perfect union, a more perfect epic. Today, we are going to be talking with Mr. Tyrone Michael Colbert, who was imprisoned at least 31 years, I'm not sure how long it was, in Maryland, and was released, this Friday, will make 1 month since his release. And you will hear him talk about some of his experiences in prison and what it took to get out, and another way of extending the story. We want no one to be lost. No one. On this day in history, let me give thanks again to Bobby Hill, who gives me these lists. Tuesday, July 19th, 2022. On this day in 1919, there were race riots. They erupted here in Washington, D.C. On this day in 1979, there was a victory for the Sandinistas-led revolution in Nicaragua. Also on this day in 1979, in her second cabinet-level appointment, Patricia Roberts Harris was named Secretary of Health and Human Services. And on this day, Sylvia Woods, who was the co-founder of the Harlem Soul Food Restaurant, died in Mount Vernon, New York. That was in 2012. Thank you again to Bobby Hill. You can hear Bobby Hill on Saturday mornings on WOWD Tacoma Park from 10 in the morning to 1 o'clock in the afternoon. This music for very interesting, new, different kinds of music. I will go straight now to my the recording. I can be sure that you understand that Tyrone has got much to do as he gets you to the world outside of the prison walls. And we recorded this a few days ago because he had, it seems that all the court business, the freedom business, uses up Tuesday. So I'm glad to know that Tuesdays is a freedom day. And let us listen to part one of my conversation with Tyrone. Hello, here we are at WOWDLP Tacoma Park, 94.3 FM on your radio and streaming worldwide at tacomaradio.org. And I'm talking today with Mr. Tyrone Colbert, who has recently been released from Jessup, is that right, incarceration? And I want him to tell me things about his experience there. And my understanding is that the governor of Maryland, Larry Hogan, made a special effort to get you out of prison. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes, okay, so I'd like to know how about that. And maybe a little bit about your own background, as much as you want to share this. Again, I've told you this is not, I'm not in investigation and I'm not trying to find out what happened, but share as much of your personal life as you would like to get us started. And then I would like you to go on to tell us one experience, one very powerful experience that you knew of from the prison. Thank you.
Okay. Before I begin, there's a message right in the middle of the screen there. I don't know if that stays there or can you move that?
You have to click that on your side.
Oh, okay.
To get rid of it.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yes.
I'm learning. Great. This
is great. Sorry, folks. We're doing this on Zoom, pre-recorded, and we're still learning things, so we'll keep on going. Yeah. All right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let me start from the beginning. I wanted to share this incident with you. In 1992, I was sent to a new institution called Jessup Correctional Institution. There was only two buildings, A and B, at that time. It was very, actually, a lot of the guys that were sent there came from other prisons. So it was very crowded, and there was very little to do. There was really basically nothing because it was brand new. They didn't even have a library. They didn't have a kitchen. They didn't even have a hospital. So I thought about this as you and I were talking earlier. I thought about this incident that, I was in the cell with this guy. They call him New York, and he was from New York. And he was a lot younger than me, very rambunctious, and he liked hanging out with the other guys in the day room, the recreation room. Well, one evening he came to me and told me, he said, did you hear the rumor that we're going to be robbed? And so I was like, Yeah, I gave him that look. I was like, robbed? You know, so a couple of days after that, every day the door opened, I sat on the top bunk. I kind of like set up because I was just waiting for somebody to come in and rob me. Of course, I weighed all of 138 pounds, so I wasn't going to do much at all.
No, you
I was. Mm-hmm. No, I was. How old was I? I was 28. I was 30 at that time. So I was new to the system, and I remember the scripture that I read when I was in the detention center. And it said, the fear of man brings a snare, but he who trusts in the Lord shall be safe. Yeah. So I said, you know what? I got to trust in the Lord. I mean, it's do or die. I got to trust in the Lord. So after that, I stopped jumping up. I just, when the door opened, it opened. So maybe a couple of days later, a good friend of mine named Mike, who I hope you will meet later on, he came to the cell and said, Tyrone, my cellie left. Would you like to move in there? I jumped off that bunk so fast. I said, absolutely. So I moved to the cell with him, and his cell just happened to be on the bottom floor, the bottom level, directly beneath the cell that I was in. And that's important because it was maybe a couple of days later, I'm in that cell and I'm typing. This is when I really first started writing. Mm-hmm. And I heard all this rumbling overhead. So I thought, well, you know, guys, they like to horseplay and wrestle and all that. So my cellie, when he came in, he said, man, he said, two guys ran in the cell that you just came out of with New York. I was like, oh, what? So he told me that. So that happened. So a week went by, and everybody was waiting to see what was going to happen next. And, you know, how guys talk. And so two guys ran back in the cell again on him. And this time, New York and his cellie were waiting for him, and they stabbed the guys. One guy literally ran out of the cell, tried to get off the tier, but the tier door was locked. He literally died right there. Oh. And another guy was airlifted to shock trauma. And that was the first murder at Jessup Correctional Institution. But I'm going to tell you, the miracle, though, was after the state police did their investigation, we were allowed to come back out of our cells. I was downstairs cleaning out the cell. I was sweeping, and a guy approached me, and he said, Tyrone, did you know about the rumor? I said, yeah, I heard about the rumor. Then he leaned in close and said, the reason they didn't go in there while you were in there, because they said they weren't going to go on there with that Christian brother. And I just, and that, I'm telling you, that floored me. I told Mike, we went in the cell and we just praised God. And I'm telling you, from that moment forward, I realized that God had a plan for me, that he was with me, even in that horrible, violent place like that. And that kept me for the next 31 years and 10 months that I served.
Oh my goodness, what a long time. It's a lifetime and a half. Oh my goodness.
Yes, it is.
And to hear such a thing. And now you make me, it's so strange to me. So the people who were hurt, one who died and one who was transferred out, were the people who were robbing. They were the criminals. They were the ones that were attacking.
Right.
New York and his new roommate. Would you call them cellies? That's the word.
Yeah, yes. Yes, they were cell partners.
Wow. And to how could they not have some kind of a health facility right on the grounds? I can't imagine such a thing. I mean, yeah. there must not even a nurse's office. I mean, nothing.
There was another prison next to it called the Merlin House of Corrections, which is nicknamed the Cut. They probably 9 times out of 10 they took the guys over to them, and then they end up flying them out. Yeah, anytime we had an emergency or any type of illness, we would go to the prison next door.
Mm-hmm. I see. Well, it's very interesting that passage from the Bible that you remember, because I've heard it, and I'm Jewish, by the way. I've heard it in my synagogue and I heard it in my mother's church. So it's used by people of the book in different places. Sometimes if you worry too much about human beings, you get nowhere. I know it's not funny. I'm sorry to hear. Even bad people. I don't want people to be killed. It's just too
right,
bad.
Right. But, that was just the first of many. that was the first of many. Yes.
And you want to walk around with that kind of thing in your head and wonder how is it possible to be quote unquote normal? Nobody can be normal, I guess. Right. It's kind of hard to imagine that kind of situation. And that was your first experience of that. Wow.
Yes, it was.
Yes, and so I'm sorry. I'm so busy being affected by it that I'm not talking very clearly. But
okay,
it's like you may start off with a shock and then see if I can still talk or not.
But you know, I really believe that God allowed me to see that so that I could know that I could stay strong, that I can do within that course. At that time in 1992, I didn't know. It would be until 2022 before I was released, but that stayed with me.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what happened, cases were denied, family members passed away. It just stayed with me that Tyrone, God is with you. You just got to stay there. He's with you. Even though I don't understand things, even though I don't like things, just know that he is there.
And it's interesting that these robbers, were affected by that meant something to them. They clearly believed it.
Absolutely.
They would believe something.
I have to add something here. I don't know who those people are to this day. I don't know who they were. I guess I probably could ask Mike, but I don't know. Maybe there's a part of me that's like, Tyrone, just leave it alone.
Leave it alone. Yeah. Somebody else took care of it for you. So leave it alone. Yeah. Indeed. Wow, what a story to start out with. Are you from Maryland itself? Are you?
I'm originally from Washington, D.C., born at the hospital. I spent the first 10 years in there. I'm one of 5 children, 3 brothers, a sister. My mother and father worked for the government. And I think, 1972, they moved to this new development called Columbia.
Oh, I know about that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I basically grew up. I was basically raised in Columbia, Maryland.
Okay, mm-hmm. That was one of those planned cities from
yes
the early times when they were trying to plan cities and make them perfect from the very beginning. Yes, I've right. given a couple of talks there. I've been there, I've written a couple of books and I've shared them with communities in Columbia 2 or 3 times, and I think I've even been to one of the schools there. If I remember, I'm pretty sure that I have. So,
yes.
Okay, that's an interesting background for me. And I let me tell my audience here that I became aware of you and your plea to be released from prison through reading Port of Harlem. And,
yes.
And forgive me, his name, Wayne, and his last name, Young.
Yes, the publisher is Wayne Young.
Wayne Young, Port of Harlem. And I have written for them, I guess I haven't written for them. I was interviewed by them, I should say, during the Black Lives Matter events. And yeah, and I almost got myself knocked upside the head when I was trying to defend a statue downtown. There was a statue of called the Emancipation Statue. And if a first glance at it, and even at a second or third glance, may not look like it's that complimentary to Black people, but it's the first statue in the whole United States ever paid for by African Americans. And a former slave gave her her first $5 that she earned as a free woman to have that statue put up there.
And that's pretty old.
Yeah, it's very old. And it's unfortunately, the Black people had no say on what the statue looked like. So we can't blame her for the way it's set up necessarily. But she gave her first $5 and her name is on the plaque. And I don't want to erase her history. You think this woman came out of slavery and saved up $5, which was a lot of money back in 1866, and gave money for this statue. And I think it should be put in context rather than just eliminated and destroyed. Anyway, I went down there and tried to save it, and that's how I ended up in Port of Harlem. come on, remember our ancestors, and we have more information than they have, but thank goodness they were there. They took the blows for us, and we got to preserve them if we can.
That's right.
Yes. So that was my connection, and once I got there, I started following your story, and I went back, and you were, I guess you were writing. Now you already mentioned several things I never thought of. You had a typewriter in your cell, right?
Yes. My sister-in-law at the time sent me one of those old big, it was an electric typewriter, but it was one of those real huge big ones, though. And I couldn't type a lick, but I'm telling you, I was plucking away. Mm-hmm.
And you learn how to do that. And did you write it all before then, or did you start writing while you were there?
No, I didn't write before then. I basically started just writing little essays about drugs because my situation occurred due to a drug habit I had in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So I was writing about drugs and prison and all that kind of stuff.
I see. Wow. Well, I guess I feel that people who are, go through troubles that bring them into our penal system, right? Whether they did it or didn't do it. Either way, you've got something to teach the rest of us, because the reason why you're where you are is because you're human and I'm human too. And I need to know. I need your information to help me, because there are moments that could have gone the wrong way for so many people, and you don't know what you're like. You don't know what your soul is like. And what you can do is to tell us what it's like and how to be, and how you've managed to free yourself and leave yourself. So you've been, I guess it's been less than a month? Has it been less than a month you've been released? Or?
Actually, today is my third week.
Third week, not even a full month. Wow, so today is your month will be next Friday?
Next Friday.
Well, that's my 75th birthday, so.
Well,
So you'll be celebrating a month, and I'll be celebrating 75 years.
Two reasons to celebrate.
Yes, indeed so. And I let me also tell my audience, I was hoping to get you on my show several months ago, but Wayne Young of Port of Harlem suggested that I wait till you were out. And I had wanted to talk with you because I read that Governor Hogan had signed for your release and that sort of thing. So anyway, we're at about 13 minutes, and I think I'll end part one right here, so we have more time for the next section. So we'll be right back with part two, my friends. Yes, so that was part one of my conversation with Mr. Tyrone Colbert. Let me remind you that you're listening to Epic City on WOWDLP Tacoma Park, 94.3 FM, and streaming worldwide on TacomaRadio.org. WOWD is a media sponsor of Live Jazz Nights at the Tacoma Station Tavern, located on 4th Street Northwest in Tacoma, D.C. And on Saturday, July 23rd, the performer is Elijah Jamal Balbade and Soul Station. Tickets and information at jkproductions.org. Let me say that again, jkproductions.org. That's to hear Elijah Jamal Balbade and the Soul Station at the Tacoma Station Tavern this Saturday, July 23rd. And I am going to continue right ahead with part two, with the recording B of with Mr. Tyrone Colbert. Okay, here we are back on Epic City. Carol Olivia Heron, your host. This is part two of my conversation with Mr. Tyrone Colbert. And he was incarcerated in Jessup, and he's telling us about his experience, a special release by Governor Larry Hogan of Maryland. We're going to hear about that in our third part. Right now, he's going to tell us about the writings and how he started writing while he was there. Or I don't know where it began. Did it begin there? Did it begin in earlier places? You let me know.
Yes, it began in prison. But prior to prison, I never thought about writing. But when I got to prison, I just felt like God just told me to use words to bring him glory. And I just started from that point. I never had any education in writing. You know, I graduated from high school, but nothing about creative writing. So I just basically just started writing about prison life, about drugs, about the importance of family, those type of things. And I really wasn't doing anything with my writing. I was writing them and then putting them in a folder and throwing the folder in a locker somewhere. Mm-hmm. But as I continued, of course, I grew and developed. And my first article that Port of Harlem published, I was working as the chaplain's clerk. And my job as a clerk was I was typing letters for him. And basically, I would run around the jail delivering greeting cards or Bibles, those type of requests that people made of the chaplain. So I would make deliveries. Well, one evening when I made a delivery, I came out of the building and I believe it was 2:30 in the afternoon, and it was lockdown time. That's when the whole jail locks down. But when I came out the building, I could look down the compound and I just saw a mass of people. They were just, it was like you're riding down the block, and you're just seeing people just talking and just walking together. Mm-hmm. And it just struck me. I felt like I wasn't even in prison. Mm. People just, you know, they were just lollygagging. And so when I went back to the cell, I thought about it. I said, you know, for some people, prison is just like being uptown. You have your homeboys and your family members, and you know, they have their food. So I wanted to attack that. Mm-hmm. I wanted to tell people. In fact, the article was called "Simply Walk Away," yes. And I wanted to show people what prison really like. What is it really like? It's not like Hollywood. But I didn't want to deal with the physical side, because we all know about the violence, et cetera, et cetera. I wanted to deal with the emotional side that you never see spoken about on television. So I talked about being locked in the cell. I talked about 4th of July and Christmas and New Year's Eve and holidays, and how we're just in this cell. We're in this day room with smoke and imitation fruit punch and nasty hot dogs. You know, I really get to the people. Yeah, I wanted to let them know this is what you deal with. You know, you're making phone calls and family members saying, I can't visit you this week. Oh, I don't have any money to send you. And I wanted to talk about how people have their girl, you know, they have their lady uptown, they're calling them. And after a couple of months or years, they're like, look, I got to go my own way. And you don't have anything, you know, you have no recourse. So I wanted to really talk about the emotional side. And at the end of that, I simply said, walk away. Walk away from the drugs, walk away from the gangs, walk away from the violence, walk away from them things that are going to send you here, because this place is hell. There's nothing pretty about it. There's nothing nice about it. And a lot of men, and me included, spent a lot of time that night filling out, soaking our pillows with tears. You know, big, strong, you know, guys convicted of all kinds of heinous crimes. they're crying in their cells because of the environment. So that's so. Anyway, so, go ahead.
I'm curious. Go back to your first opening image. I didn't quite understand. Did you see it in your mind's eye, or did you actually see people standing around like they're on the street?
I mean, I actually saw it.
And the people were treating that like it was home?
Yeah, I mean, they're just, you know, they're walking and talking and laughing and just playing with each other. And I'm not going to say that emotionally they weren't stressed or anything, but it just the image, when I saw the image, I was just thinking, man, this is like, you know, like you're walking down 14th Street or something. And people are just.
Yeah, and it's not, yes, and the people are misreading their own lives in many ways.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Amen. There's a lot of heartache and pain behind all of this that is not being exposed, especially on television. Mm-hmm. So when I met, so basically, I think probably in year 2000, a guy, a good Muslim friend of mine, he showed me an article. He said, "Tyrone, look at this article," because he was also a writer. Mm-hmm. So he showed me this magazine called Port of Harlem. I said, "Oh, that looks good." I said, "You think I can get my story published?" He said, "Go ahead, write them." So I just wrote Wayne Young, and I sent him that article, Simply Walked Away, and the rest is history. He wrote me back, said he loved it, and he wanted me from that time on to write. I think his magazine was coming out every quarterly. Mm-hmm. So I was, yeah. And I loved it. There was no pay or anything like that, but it just gave me the venue to go ahead and talk about prison life.
Yes. And I read, as I said, I read a little bit about that. And now I'm going to ask you to go into more detail, because for you, what it was like on 4th of July or Christmas is known, but it's not known to me. So go through, take me through one of those holidays. Just tell me what happened. The morning of the 4th of July. What's going on?
What's going on? You're waking up and you think, and you know, in the prison, there's no hoopla, there's no celebration, whatever holiday it is, it's just another day. But when you watch television, you know, there's 4th of July sale, Christmas sale, Thanksgiving sale. So everybody's talking about the holiday. And then on 4th of July, they're saying, you know, we're all going to the Inner Harbor, or people are going downtown. And then, of course, naturally what happens, say I grew up in Columbia. So my mother would take me, one of my brothers and sisters to, what's that lake called? Lake Kinemaquandi in Columbia. So of course, all those memories came flooding back. I'm thinking, man, I remember mom took me to the lake, you know, took a little picnic basket and, you know, we ran around and ate ice cream. And so that stuff comes back to you. And you just, you just start thinking about it. It's like, wow. And then of course, the food that they serve us is nothing like mom's cooking, you know? So it brings pain and sorrow and misery. You know, it depends on how far you let it go.
Okay, you know, tell me this. Now, you're saying things, this is what happens when people live in different worlds, and you're saying things that seem natural to you that I don't know what you're talking about. You said a Thanksgiving cell and a 4th of July cell. What do you mean? There's a cell where they're celebrating it, or the television is, or what do you mean?
I'm saying, when you watch television.
Where is the television? So tell me about.
You're right. We individually have televisions if you can afford it, if your family can afford it. And there's also a recreation room where there's a television. Now, of course, there's so much noise in the recreation room that you're not going to hear the television, but you can see it. Mm-hmm. For the most part, most guys have their own individual television. It's probably like a 13, 15 inch television. Mm-hmm. So you're watching that, and you're watching, you know, Christmas shows and people having cookouts and barbecues and that stuff gets to you after a while. Now, of course, probably maybe like the 20 years, I kind of got used to it, you know, dealing with holidays. Because I was dealing with it for so long. But basically, in the beginning, it's really hard. And then everyone's trying to get on the phone to talk to family members to see what they're doing. So it can get pretty bad and get pretty miserable. And those are the things that I wanted people to understand, that those are the emotional things that you're going to go through, the pain, the misery, and the sorrow that you don't hear about on television. No one talks about those things. They talk about the violence in prison. But, you know, a lot of guys, they deal with that by joining gangs in prison. So they figure if I join a gang, then I'll be protected from the violence. Yeah, but no one's going to protect you from the emotional and mental pain of prison.
And tell me, okay, so I'm getting a little bit of a picture there. I have to tell you that I don't look at television that much. So you're talking about people know it from television. I probably don't even know that much. But I do. I'm a literature person. I'm a classicist. So I know about prisons in ancient Rome or 20th century Russia and things like that, probably more than I do about 21st century United States. And I have read some pretty horrendous stories, and certainly they would not have had a television in the room. These old stories that I'm talking about. So I'm actually pleased to know that there's that much, connection with the outside world. Now, tell me about the library. Did you have a library?
We do have a library, and it's pretty wide. It's probably broad in the library. You can get reference books on almost any subject you want. Fiction, nonfiction. You also have in the library, probably used more than anything else, you have the legal library, where most people go, and that's usually like a little section in the library, and you can ask for legal books because people want to do their own cases. So they read their own cases.
Oh, okay. Wow. So that's intriguing. Do you have, I've been invited a couple of times to prisons where I've given talks for my books. Did you have anything like that? And you had visitors that presented programs that presented?
Absolutely. I was just going to say that too. You have what they call there's a volunteer activity coordinator. This is an individual. Most of the times it's someone who's hired from the outside, or it could be an officer. And this office, the volunteer activity coordinator, which they call VAC, this office plans different programs for the prison. They have speakers come in. You may have a family day, which means you can invite your family in, and they have like, it's like a big cookout, a big picnic. They have there's so many different programs. They have spiritual programs. They have legal programs. So those are the kind of things. And you also have like the writers group, the chess group. These are different programs that people join. Kind of keeps people busy, keeps people involved. Okay. I was president of the writers group, the writers club.
Wonderful. How many, can you tell me, did you have regular meetings or how did that work out?
Well, once a week, every club, every group had their own day. Mm-hmm. I don't remember it was, but yeah, we met once a week, and then once a month or once every other month, that club could have what they call a banquet. Mm-hmm. And the banquet, the members can invite in one family member. Some people invite their children, their girlfriends, their mothers, their aunts, and they'll sit there, share a meal, and we'll put on a program depending on what type of group it was, what type of club.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of positive things that a person can get involved in, as well as negative things. It's just like out here in society. What do you choose? What's your weapon?
Yeah, but it still feels hard. I can understand why you went for the. You see me frowning. Let me tell my audience, we're doing this on Zoom with visuals, even though you're not going to be able to see us, and I'm frowning in spite of the good things you're telling me, because I can imagine if you're inviting one person here and one person there, and you have visiting hours, and the person can't come every week because they got lives going on too. And
absolutely.
There for several years, like I said, people go say, I'm sick, I'm not coming anymore. 3 years, two years, 5 years. And so in spite of these good things, you're losing out on the interconnections with the world.
Yeah.
that you had before.
And yes.
It sounds, in spite of the good parts of what you're saying, it sounds painful to me. And I can remember when I visited, it was a very snowy day in winter. It was a winter's day when I went to some, I don't even know what kind of a place it was, somewhere in northern Maryland. And I was there talking with them. And they arranged one for men and one for women. And the one for women ended up being canceled. And I never could figure out why. And I kind of distressed over that. And I didn't know what was going on because, of course, I wanted to make sure that I could share with as many people as I could. Were they both men and women at your facility?
No, they were not. But I do want to add something. I want to say something to you about that, that a lot of people don't know. I think this is kind of sad. And I told my fiance this. There was a volunteer who used to come into the prison, and she shared this with me. She said, "Tyrone, you know, when you go to a male prison, when you go to the visiting room, you see all types of people in there. You see mothers, fathers, girlfriends, brothers and sisters, and you know, the children and that kind." Said, "But when you go to a woman's prison, there aren't any. The only men that go see the women are usually a brother or a father. There are no boyfriends. There are no husbands to come see the women in prison." And I thought that was pretty sad because, I mean, my fiance, she's been with me for 13 years. And I don't know if it's indicative of male behavior or what. I don't know where to put it. But say a lot of women, they don't have boyfriends and husbands coming to see them. Whereas the men, they'll have wives and girlfriends come to see them.
Isn't that interesting? Yes.
I
felt that there was something unfortunately different in the two, but of course it was none of my business. Who am I to go there and say, "Well, this is not fair. I spoke to the men, you know, for an hour and a half. Why can't I talk to the women?" And they said, "No, it's been canceled," and that was it. And I had nothing to say about it, of course.
Right.
And it did feel very frustrating. And I was very little distressed over that way of handling it and treating the situation. Well, you've given me something to think about in terms of gender connections, which I'd never even imagined. I'm going to end this part two now, and we're going to come back and talk about the intervention of. Okay, that was in the part two of my conversation with Mr. Tyrone Michael Colbert. I keep pronouncing it like Stephen Colbert. Colbert. And remind you that this is Epic City with Carol Olivia Heron on WOWD Tacoma Park, LP 94.3 on the radio, streaming worldwide at tacomaradio.org. And I want to play a little song here for a break here. Let's listen to Nina Simone.
Mayor.
Feeling good.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, 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 ooh. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on the tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, and I'm feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean? Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world and a bold world for me. When you shine, you know how I feel. Scent of the pine, you know how I feel. Oh, freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me.
Nina Simone, Feeling Good. And let me remind you to stay tuned after Epic City to hear Addie and the high school take on world life, rock and roll music, and all of that. And I'm going to go straight on to the third part of my conversation with Mr. Tyrone Colbert. Hello, we are back at Epic City with Mr. Tyrone Colbert and Carolivia Heron on WOWDLP, Tacoma Park. And we're going to be talking about, Governor.
He only has a couple more months left.
Yes, right. To the governor of Maryland, Governor Hogan, and how you came about to get the release of prison.
Okay, this is a pretty lengthy story, but I need to start from the beginning.
Yeah, no, don't worry about the length. Go on and tell us the story, please.
Okay, in February of 2021, I went before the parole board. Of course, there was COVID at the time, so we weren't meeting in person. It was a telephone conference. So I spoke with two parole commissioners. They basically told me, you're doing well, you're doing great, just stay on that path, but we want you to get a updated risk assessment. That's basically a psychological evaluation. Mm-hmm. I had already had one, but they wanted me to get it updated. So I said, okay, fine. About a month later, I was looking through some paperwork and I saw a result of my old risk assessment, my old parole hearing. And that the recommendation on there said that at your next parole hearing, this risk assessment may be considered. So it was like, Eureka, wait a minute. They never considered this parole hearing. Mm-hmm. I mean, my risk assessment. Yeah. So I called my lady friend up and we said, look, we got to write these people and explain to them, you said this risk assessment will be considered, yet you didn't consider it. So basically, I shot a letter off to them explaining them numerous reasons why I should receive parole or delayed release based on my, and let me say this too, the original risk assessment, I passed it. Mm-hmm. I received low risk, which means for violent crime, drug relapse, all of that. So I mailed that letter off on May 10th, 2021. 30 days later, my fiance, or maybe 45 days later, she called the parole commission and the lady told her, oh, Mr. Colbert's letter is being considered right now. Where they're reviewing it. So that summer went by and I'm, you know, just, my lady's name is Ivy. We were just hopeful. So in November of 2021, she's from Seattle. So her mother and brother came in. She went to pick them up at the airport. She receives a phone call from somebody from the state of Maryland. They told her that they're investigating my home plan. So is she willing to do an interview? She said, of course. She did the interview. So when I called her up, she was excited. And she said, look, somebody from the state is doing they're interviewing, they're checking out your home plan. Mm-hmm. So I was like, wow, okay. So that told me that my name had been placed on the governor's desk. Mm-hmm. In order to get on the governor's desk, six members of a 10-member commission's office has to recommend you. Mm-hmm. So 2 weeks later, I'm at work. I worked in the furniture plant. They tell me I have a lawyer attorney visit. Of course, I knew I didn't have an attorney, so I knew who it was. I ran down there, and it was the governor's legal counsel.
Oh, wow.
Hallelujah. Mm-hmm. He told me, he said, Mr. Colbert, you've been on the governor's desk since June. And I didn't even know.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, I mailed the letter May 10th.
May. Mm-hmm.
But this is the blessing. He said, I received a unanimous decision to go to the governor's desk. But remember, in February, 5 months earlier, two of the commissioners told me to get an updated risk assessment.
Wow.
So 5 months later, now all of them say go to the governor's desk.
Okay.
So I talked to the governor's legal counsel, and we had a good conversation. He was asking me all kinds of questions about the crime, about what I've been doing. And he told me, he said, the governor wants to hear from you. The governor's going to hear from the victim's family, and the governor's going to hear from the district attorney to see what they say. So about a week, this was like towards the end of November, maybe 2 weeks went by, and I'm not going to lie, I was holding on to faith. I'm trusting God, but I'm kind of shaky there. You know, I'm like, whoa.
Yes, yes.
I'm just hoping that this, so the legal counsel told me, he said, the governor has three options. He can deny you, he can grant it, or he can just not do anything. I forgot the phrase that they use. He cannot do anything. Oh, it's inactive. He can leave it inactive. He said, if it remains inactive for 180 days, you automatically get parole.
Mm-hmm.
So December 20th, two commissioners came back to see me, the same two commissioners who I had parole hearing with in February 21. This time I saw them in person. They said, Mr. Colbert, your 180 days is elapsed. The governor chose not to do anything. Therefore, you are automatically paroled.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave me a 6-month delayed release.
What is delayed release? Oh, obviously, it's delayed. That's what they call it.
What that means is when they say 6-month delayed release, that in 6 months, I will be released. Some people get a year delay release. Some people get 10 months. I don't know exactly why they do that.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes they'll put a stipulation on it. We want you to go to pre-release. No, we want you to go to camp and go to work. They want you to maybe like move through the system a little more. But on mine, there was no condition. It was just 6 months. So this was in December. So in June, they said you will be released.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now to me, it sounds like he wanted you released, but for some political reason, he didn't want to sign it. That's what it sounds like to me.
That's right.
I'm sorry. Right, because if he wanted you not to be released, he could have stopped it. He could have stopped it. Mm-hmm.
In fact, that's what the commissioner said to me. He said, well, Mr. Hogan, Governor Hogan must see something in you because he allowed you to be released.
Mm-hmm.
He allowed those proof. So
yeah,
that was that was a blessing.
Yes. How interesting. How strange our government works. I'm sorry. It sounds
right.
The rules of government. It's almost like if you could go so far and not scream out loud, then you can get released. I'm sorry, I'm a literature person, you got to forgive me. I'm reminded of some scenes from some Charles Dickens novels in the 19th century that have a couple of scenes in jail. And to find out whether a person really can be released, I remember a scene where the bureaucracy gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And if you can keep your patience, you can get free. And it's almost like something like that it's not for any particular reason except to make sure that you're not going to explode at some point.
Absolutely. And sometimes I think I wonder about that. Do they keep putting you off to see how are you going to react? What are you going to do? So, and I think I have to go back to my faith, because that really just kept me at peace, kept me focused, and kept me saying, all right, Tom, just we're there. Just keep going. Just keep going. So.
Well, my goodness, you certainly informed me. I have a, well, we hope to have your friend. What's his name, Mike, did you say?
His name is Mike. I've already spoken to him.
Yes, I have a show, as I mentioned to you, at the end of August, honoring one of my young cousins who died. My first year having this radio show, he died in late August, and I like to do a show highlighting some of the terrible right. situations Black men get into. It's like this honoring, remembering, holding up Black men show, if you know what I mean. It's one of the reasons for that particular day, and I like to do that then. And so this friend of yours, Mike, I'm letting my audience know as well, I hope that he can come be on the show in late August as a part of that honoring and holding up to the light as much as we can. So, wow, we are actually pretty close to the end of our time, believe it or not. It seems it's gone so very quickly. I'm so glad we managed to connect finally, and that Wayne Young, I thank you, and Port of Harlem, what a task you're doing. I've sent a lot of people to Port of Harlem, by the way. I think is it portofharlem.com or .org? I'm sorry, I don't know which one. But just type in Port of Harlem in your computer and you'll get there. And let me tell you that if you want to get a picture of the variousness of the African-American community, it really gets it. It's amazing to me, because I thought, well, maybe he's going to be on one side and not the other. And I didn't know whether he was going to yell at me for trying to protect his statue or not. I felt wonderful sharing with him. I didn't feel like I was being pushed to take any particular side, and that he would have been just as polite to somebody who wanted to take it down, that he would have had the same kind of respect for the other human being. Thank you so much, Wayne, for your work. And thank you, Tyrone, in particular, for being so open with me. The idea of spending that many years cut off from what I think of as the world. I know there's a world inside too. And right. having the openness that you have is a beautiful thing and a blessing upon you. I hope that you have that and continues with you. And with Ivy out there, I don't know if she's listening in the the sidelines there, but
hopefully she'll be able to see this.
I hope she will too. And yeah, that's right. By the way, I can send you the visual of it as well, although I can't do that for the regular audience, but I can send you one.
That's perfect.
Yes. And any last words before, not last for all time, but last for the show, would you like to leave the audience with?
I'd just like to say, for those who, if you know anyone who is incarcerated, support them as best you can. Even if it's just receiving a 5-minute phone call from them, just because a lot of times guys and women just need somebody to say hello to, just need to hear something outside of that environment.
Mm-hmm. There is another world.
There is another world, yes.
Okay, thank you so much.
And thank you.
No te va mi miedo tu nace, no te va mi aruelo, mi arue mi arato nace, lo lo ya ova mi duelo, no viva. Salut tout le monde, tant que les
sentiments a lo to no nama.
WOWD